Today's daf in the Sefer Bechorot brought to you by Ben Chamot Yerushalayim is daf Memtet. We're holding on the Gemara, three lines up from the bottom of Memchet Amud Beit. So you will recall that yesterday the Mishnah said in a case where two people are married, each one to their wife, respective wife, and then both women had never had a Bechor before, they both give birth, they both have Bechorot, and the babies get mixed up. And one of the children dies. And what happened over here is that they had both paid up before Shloshim Yom. We're going to assume that that's doable. We'll see later on today precisely what the circumstances are. But the both fathers had paid up before the Shloshim. So the Mishnah said if they had given it to the same Kohen, then that Kohen gives it back, puts it in front of them, and it's their business. But he has to give back five Shloshim. But if he gives it to two Kohenim, then each one of those Kohanim clearly can claim that they got the pinion of the surviving child. That is a little bit strange already. Mishnah Shnei Kohanim, why should there be a difference? If you have two Kohanim, then obviously the reason that it doesn't work is because each Kohen will be able to say, what are you coming to me for? It was the other Kohen that got the money for the Bechor that had died. So he's Ozalagabi Haivamatchle, Ozalagabi Haivamatchle, but why isn't that true when there's a single Kohen? Since he took the money from two separate fathers, so when Father A comes to him and says, give me my money back, Kohen says, why should I give you your money? Your son survived. When Father B comes and says the same thing, he says, why should I give you your money back? The son that survived was yours. He says to each one, same thing. Because you got to... No, it never has me, Father. You're trying to get money out of me. You go prove. Right, so since I can be matriu, so how do we ever get a suit? The only way, obviously, is where one person sues, but also has a power of attorney. So then I can act as the one who sues for both. Otherwise, it's two separate lawsuits, and each one of them doesn't have a leg to stand on. And therefore, the Gemara wants to know, why can't you do the same thing in a case where it's a single coin? And it's here that Shmuel said, as we mentioned earlier, that indeed the set of Mishnayot here in this parak has got to be referring to cases where we use a power of attorney, which is why we said before that we've got a problem if you can use a power of attorney. That was the whole issue that we said. Don't try to tell me that our Mishnayot is talking about where you don't come with the power of attorney, because the only way to understand this Mishnah, as Shmuel points out, is that it's talking about that you're using whatever legal device is necessary to get the money back. So that you can only use against a single Kohen when both parents are coming together in order to sue. The only way they come together is by running a power of attorney. All right, Shmuel, the Babar Shah. Now, the question is, the Nahardoi have a general rule, a legal principle. Lo katvinan adarchata. Now, really, in many places it says urchata. An adarchata is not usually used for harsha'a, it's used for shtar, usually like a will and things like that. But so there's two lishonos, either urchata or adarchata. But the point over here is we're talking about either a general sense of a legal document, and we understand that that means a power of attorney, which is called a harsha'a, or literally an urchata, which means a rishus, which is a power of attorney. But the point is exactly the same. So the general rule is you do not write a power of attorney on something that doesn't have any legal presence, on money that is owed you, but that doesn't have a lien. So in other words, if you're going to be suing for, let's say, taking out a mortgage, you have money that's liened against the mortgage is property. The property is real. So if the property is real, you can write a power of attorney against that property. But you can't write a power of attorney on a theory. Money you claim is due you. The other guy says it isn't due you, but I have a power of attorney on what? Power of attorney on what? There's nothing physical that's here. So where there's an object that's undeniably real, which is why we call real estate, you can write against real estate, but over here you're not coming to collect against real estate. You're coming to get your cash back from the coin. So how can you get back? So, I mean, the very fact that a court will write the archeta would have been the nirzik ishira, would have looked like a lie. The court is saying, you can come to recover money. What money? The money you claim? How can the court go ahead and say the money you claim would give you, the other guy, the right to get? There is no such money. Maybe you're lying. How do we know? So therefore, the rule would be that unless there's a real object that the Urchata can be written against, we wouldn't write it. So how can Shmuel say that it's talking about that you wrote an Urchata? Yes, says the Gemara, but that's Hanimili the Kafre. That's because normally, let's say you have a case where you're trying to recover a loan. The guy claims he already paid the loan. You're the lender. So where there's real estate against which you have a lien, the court says, look, the lien exists, that's for sure. The other guy can now try to prove that that lien was already discharged. But the lien exists. We're writing now the Urchata for you. You're giving it to somebody else to sue for you. Fine. That's fine. There's real property that has to be dealt with. There's a lien against the piece of property. The other guy has to prove was discharged. But over here, how can we write? That's what we're claiming, Nardoi. How can we write against what? There's nothing to write against. But that's only because it's not as if a power of attorney really requires real estate to be written against. It's just that it looks as if we're supporting a claim that may be completely frivolous, unless there's real estate. But in this case, the Kohen is not denying the fact that what happened happened. He's just saying, I mean, how do I know which Bechor died? Who are you? So over there, the court isn't doing anything that's supporting something that's frivolous. We know for a fact that there were two Bechorot. We know for a fact that one of them died. We know for a fact that both of the parents had paid up. And the Kohen is not denying any of those facts. So all that we need over here is the legal instrument by which I can come into court. And you, the Kohen, cannot say, you? Coming into court? Your child is the one who survived. Why would I talk to you? So I need an instrument to show you talk to me because I'm also the other guy's lawyer. Here's his power of attorney. So forget about who's Bechor lived or died. It's irrelevant. So therefore, Hanimelech the Kafre. In this case, where nobody's denying the facts, what is wrong with writing an instrument of collection? Hey, the low Kafre, and that's the point that Shmuel is making. Katvina. Okay, then we had the case over here where there's a zakar, the nekeva. So in that case, the avot clearly are peturim, and ain't kind of going klum because each one will say, well, maybe mine was the daughter. Why should I pay? So the child may know he's a bechor because one mother had a boy, one mother had a girl. But the father doesn't know he's the father of the male. Maybe he's the father of the female because we've got the babies mixed up. So we don't know who owes the money. Now, in that case, Tana Ravuna adds a case where there were two boys and a girl. Shnei zecharim v'nekeva, ein kan lekohen klum, really for exactly the same reason. If there were two boys and a girl, then each one of the fathers could say that the female was my child and was born first in the event that it was the twin. So therefore, there's nothing wrong with including, in that case, Shnei Zecharim v'Nekeva, Ein Kan Lekohen Klum, they're nobody in the sky, right? There, even the boy doesn't know when he grows up that he's a Bechor. Because maybe he is the Bechor, but maybe he is a twin. And if he is a twin, maybe a sister was born first. Or maybe a brother was born first. So this is a great case, to say, in Kan Lekohen Klum. For some reason, our Tana leaves out the case of Shnei Zecharim v'Nekeva. Now why? V'tana didan. The reason that our Tana leaves it out is because this particular case is only applicable to the part of the Mishnah that is talking about two people who were married to two women. But remember that the Mishnah began with the case of one person married to two women. So in that case, you can't say ein kan lekohen klum, because no matter how you split the children, obviously he owes for one. So the Mishnah doesn't want to start a case that isn't going to be applicable across the board. So it avoids this case. Now, not that there's anything wrong with it for the latter case, on the contrary. So since, given the b'shnei anashim u'demashkachet la, but where it was one guy married to two women, which is the opening case of the Mishnah, lo mashkachet lo, but then this case is not going to pattern him. So therefore, lo matina, we don't want to start up with it, and we don't even mention it in the Mishnah. Rich?
Zuch the heilige Mishnah.
The Rebbe has spoken. Meet habein betok shloshim yom. Now here is, this has nothing to do with what we said before. We're just now coming for the first time to discuss what we've just been assuming all along, which is the derech of the Mishnayos. Now let's discuss the principle. The principle is that if a child dies b'tor shloshim yom, then even if the father had given the money to the Kohen gives it back, right? I mean, that's what we've been assuming all along, these other Mishnayos. So, Ava Pishinatan la Kohen Yachzir. However, if the child dies Le'acher Shloshim Yom, then even if you hadn't paid up the Kohen, the father still has to pay the Kohen. Ava Pishalona Tan Yitain, because the moment that the 30 days are over, the father now has a loan, so to speak, that he owes. He's got a chov, he's got a debt that he's got to pay to the Kohen. And therefore, he's going to have to pay. The fact that the child is no longer alive doesn't change anything. Pidyon HaBen is an actual chiyuv that is chal after Ben Shloshim Yom. Now, suppose the child died on the 30th day. So maybe Yom Shloshim, that is premature. And it's Kiyom Shelefanav. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Im Natan Lo Yitol, Vi Im Lo Natan Lo Yitain. So Rabbi Akiva says, essentially, that it's a suffix. If you've already paid the money to the Kohen, you can't get it back. But if the Kohen hadn't been paid, then you don't have to pay. And we're going to see what it is that we're discussing. So the question over here, by the way, just you should know in general, Rashi always brings the din of Shloshim Yom. He relates to the Gemara in Shabbat, where we say that any child that survived Shloshim Yom is not considered to be a neva. Which makes it sound like the whole issue is to determine that he's a bar kayoma, which is certainly not the case. In other words, even if we know for a fact that an infant is full term, and therefore not a neva, and it gets into a car accident on the 10th day of his life and is killed, has nothing to do with proving that he's a neva, we don't say in that case that since he was clearly not a neva, the chiyuv of Pidyon HaBen was before Shlosh, because we always measure Shlosh. Rashi just interrelates the sugyas because the Gemara in Shabbat brings proof from the fact that Miben Shlosh Yom V'mala that we count in the Midbar is clearly an indication of that not being a neva at the very least. But that could be the general, in other words, in order to make the rule, okay, when do we start counting? That's when we start counting. It doesn't necessarily mean that the reason is because in each individual case we need to make certain that it's not a neva. That really wouldn't matter. So now the question is, where do we get the idea of what the din is on the Yom Shloshim? My time I had the Rabbanan. So what is the logic of the Rabbanan who say that, well, the 30th day is definitely considered to be the equivalent of free. It's still within the Shloshim. Where do they get this from? They get it from the fact that the Torah, in describing the exchange of the Bechorot for B'nai Lady, the Torah says Beferish that B'kot Kol Bechor Zachar Mi Ben Chodesh V'ma'ala. Now the word V'ma'ala means and up. That means after the 30th day and up. That's what the point is of saying Vamala. So even though by Pidyon HaBen, where it says Ufaduya Biben Chodesh Tiveh, and it doesn't say Biben Chodesh Vamala, but we learn it out from the same din of Bechor that was in the Midbar, right? Where we're counting how the age of the child, Mishloshim Yom. Mahatam Vamala. So just like over there, it says Beferush the Pasuk. And up. Af Hachanami Vamala. So it means specifically and up. And Rabbi Akiva, I mean, that's pretty clear. Why doesn't Rabbi Akiva learn out from the din of the age of the Bechorot in the Midbar? Because Rabbi Akiva says, look, I'm not sure that you can learn it from there. I'll tell you why. Because Misafkele, Mida Yitzchak Lemichta, we have another sugya where 30 days is definitive, and that is in the sugya of Arachim. We're over there, the minimal amount of chiv of Arachim is for a 30-day-old. And over there, the Torah says, again, the din of Vamala, not on the 30-day-old, but on the 60-year-old. There it says, Biben Shishib Shana Vamala. But we learn out that Vamala there defines all of the values of Erech. So there's like 60 years and up, so then it would be 30 years and up, 30 days and up, all the various years are Vamala. Now my question is, do I, in fact, recognize that there is a general rule of Vamala, which I would have learned out there for Erech and from Bechor. In other words, if that would be true, why did the Torah have to tell me a separate din of Vamala by Erech? So that implies to me, says Rabbi Akiva, that we've got Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Ke'achad. I mean, the Torah clearly views that din of Pekod Kol Bechor Zachar Miben Chodesh Vamala to be a unique din that we don't learn out to Erech. So, therefore, I say, since, says Rabbi Akiva, the Torah had to write again the din of Lamala by the Sugya of Arachin, and we don't learn out the Sugya of Arachin from the Bechoros in the Midbar, so then what we have is a section, Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Kechad, and we know the rule is, if you need two sources for a thing, then it means that those two sources are unique applications and not a rule, because obviously you could have gotten away with one source if it were a rule, and it would have applied to both. So if that's the case, the din would be that apparently there is no way to learn out from that din of Pekod Kol Bechor by Midban Chodesh Ramallah. But on the other hand, says Rabbi Akiva, I'm not really sure of that, because maybe the rule of Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Kechad Im Melamdim means to some other set of issues. So to learn from Bechor to Arachin, for instance, that's a different set, right? So okay, I understand that. The Torah is telling me don't apply one to a different set. But Legufayu, I mean, basically the issue of Bechor, defining the age of a Bechor Ledorot, to say that I'm going to learn out from the age of the Bechorot and the Midbar for the exchange with Levi is not a different set of issues. That's the issue. What does the Torah mean when it says, B'duyami ben Chodesh, Tivdeh? So there, maybe we don't say, just because we needed it to teach me a different issue, Ava Legufayu, for the same question of Bechor. Maybe we do learn out. And in that case, we should learn out for here too, that it means the 30 days and up, and the 30 days like before. So I'm not sure. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, since I'm not sure, if you didn't pay, don't. But if you did pay, you can't prove that you can get your money back. Because maybe, in fact, we should say this is Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Kechad. Okay, that's all very nice in terms of a suffix in his mind. But when it comes to the din of Avelut, where over there a child dies, there's no din of Avelut on a Nefa. That's for sure. So the question over here, how to define the general rule of what the Torah means, to give you the definition of what we know to be non-Nefa. So according to that, you'd say, oh, so Rabbi Akiva says, well, you know, maybe the 30th day also the father would have to keep Avelut. No. Because actually, the general rule is, the Yomar Shmuel should say, Halakha kedivrei ha-mekel be'eva. Therefore, everyone is mother when it comes to Avelut. Yom Shloshim is as if he died on the 29th day, or the 20th day. And over there, there's no chiyuv to be mit'abel on a child, that therefore, Lagabi Distin would consider to be a nefa. Father dies within the 30 days. The child later on in life has to assume that his father died before giving money to a coin for his day. Therefore, he's got to worry about that in himself, unless he can prove on the other hand, if the father died after the child was 30 days old, then later on in life, the child should assume that he was nifdeh, because normally people are actually mekayem the pidyon, unless people tell him, you should know, your father said before he died he wasn't paid to you, ad sheyomer lo shelo nifdeh. Who livdot uvno livdot, who akodem livno? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, beno kodmo. If we have a situation in which he needs to be paid himself because his father died, and he, by this time he gets this information, he has his own son that is supposed to be poda today, and now he's going to have a double pidyon aben. Whose pidyon comes first, his or his son's? Now we're going to see, we get into some complex situations over here of what if there's only enough money available right now to be paid to one and so on. We'll get to it. So the question over here is, initially it appears it's just a shaila of, okay, which mitzvah do we do first? So Rabbi Yehuda says, the Tanakhama says that, well, a mitzvah you do on your own body is kodem. So you should take care of yourself. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, but no kodemo. Actually, the son's pidyon should come first, shemitzvato al aviv, because his own mitzvah was really lechatchila on his father to do. He is only a b'diavad if his father didn't do the mitzvah. He has to see to it that he's padui. There's a difference between the actual mitzvah to be poda and the see to it that you're padui. One is active, and therefore you need to be proactive about it, and it comes first. And the other one is to make sure that you're not a bechor that's going along without being padui. Okay, so first do your active mitzvah. That's the one for your son. Then take care of yourself. Okay, now there's one very fascinating yisod here, which our president was strongly in favor of yesterday, which is, as we were talking about, the issue of, is there a specific mitzvah of pidyon in terms of something to do with the pidyon, or are we talking about discharging a debt? If we're talking about discharging a debt, this entire discussion is a little ridiculous. This is one of the things that he points out in Shari Yosh. We're talking about the money that you're going to pay to the same guy, and you're talking about some kind of theory, is the money for me or somebody? Well, who cares? So clearly you see from here that even though we do not have any understanding of what the meaning is of being poda other than the transfer of money, there's clearly something about the act of pidyon per se in which you're meyachid the pidyon for A or for B. Nonetheless, that doesn't contradict the yisod that we've seen all along, which is that first you have to define the chiyuv of the moment in order to establish the chiyuv of the pidyon. That's true. But here we have established chiyuv. Now we're talking about kedima. We're not pretending that there's no issue of a mitzvah. It's just we're saying that we first need to determine if that mitzvah is chal. Okay, so that's one fascinating question over here. Now the other issue over here is, as Rabbi Yaakov has just raised, what do we mean by 30 days? I mean, that's not very clear. Torah says, but do you have mi ben chodesh tifta? That's been the basis of the discussion here that we just had between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanah. What does the Torah mean when it says mi ben chodesh? Now, normally, the way in which we measure a chodesh, the word chodesh means chodesh. It means the new moon. If it's really a definition of moons, then that would mean that the Torah is saying at the end of 29 days, 12 hours, and 40-some minutes, and a few seconds, that is the time in which you're part of the ben, because at that time, is biben chodesh, biben chodesh. It's now one full. Now remember, this is only a moed, what we call, it's the molada emtsa'i. So it's not really a particular month's molad. However, it's the way that we measure the month by taking the mean orbit. So the mean orbit, we have that value, the 20, and it's an extremely accurate value. That, I mean, even today is just about the most accurate value you could possibly have for a mean orbit of the moon. Every month is different because there's really no such thing as the orbit of the moon. It's a fiction. The Earth and the moon are so close to each other and so close in weight to each other that the moon doesn't really go around the Earth. They go around the comet's center of gravity. So it's a very complicated, extremely complicated thing, which is precisely why there's so much involvement in Bezdin. But the Torah has actually normalized the meaning of Chodesh to go according to the mean. Okay. So according to many poskim, and there's also Mikaris in the Rishonim for this, the meaning of Miben Chodesh Tifta is actually a mean orbit of Chodesh, of the new moon. Which would mean that actually it's not 30 days, it's 29 days and the 12 hours and the 40-some minutes. Now this obviously would be a great kula, and the Shach Paskin is like this, and many of the Paskin Paskin like this. The Mogen Avraham argues bitterly that the Gemara learns on in Rosh Hashanah that Ein Monin Sha'ot L'Chodashim, a Chodesh is defined by a day. We're Monin for its units. Its units are a day. Obviously, that's true, but the Taina of the Shach and the Taz is that that's only where we're talking about the name of the Chodesh in terms of Kiddush HaChodesh. It doesn't mean that when the Torah talks about Mi Ben Chodesh, that it means somehow, let's just make it the closest day. So therefore, normally, it's very interesting that machloket seems to be at the source of a very strange minhag that the Ashkenazim had. You'll notice that the Ashkenazim, for some reason, will not make a pidyon haben at night, and they don't have any din of Zriza Magdim la Mitzvah. Usually you go to pidyon haben, it's late in the day. Very strange. Why don't we say the same thing to the Brit Milah? That we go Zriza Magdim la Mitzvah. And what's interesting is that that's because, probably, I mean, it's not really clear 100% because nobody really talks about where it comes from, but the truth is that even though in the Machlokas of the Mogen Avraham and the Shach, it appears that the Mogen Avraham says take a typical, in other words, a normatized month, that is a chumrah, in the sense that you're not going to be able to be mekayim your mitzvah unless you know that it's 30 days. You'd have to be on the next day. And that's why we do it on the 31st day. So according to the Shachar Taz, really you could get away with it just 29 days so on later. But there are times when actually you need to worry about the Shachar Taz as a rule. Because let's say you're in Finland. You have a child born. This is why the only the Ashkenazim have this worry, because his father never lived up north. But let's say you live in Stockholm or something, one of these cities where you can have a child born before Shkia, and it's 11 o'clock at night, right? So now, when you get to the 31st day, not only at night haven't you completed really 29 full days, because that was the first day, that's day one. But it's not, the 31st day is going to be less than the full orbit of a moon. According to Magen Avraham, that doesn't matter. We look at the days. We don't look at hours. The Torah never thinks it in hours. But the problem is, according to those shittas that say you're looking at hours, even by the next morning you haven't completed 29:12 plus. Therefore, don't do it in the morning either, because you never know. People are not going to figure out. This is a very unusual halacha. We're going to have to remember the exact molad I'm doing. So because of that, you know what? Just make it later in the day. That way, even if it happened to work out, there was such a thing. It was literally, we were counting the first day, 1 minute. And after 11 o'clock at night, it was a whole day. By the time you get around to doing the Pinyin Aben at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it'll already be the full amount of the 29 hours and the 29 days and the 12 hours and 43 minutes, and everything will be fine. So that would account for the difference between practical things, the difference between the Sephardim and the Ashkenazim in those cases. No, no, no. What do you mean? You're supposed to do it on that day. What's the one thing to do it a day later? If you didn't do it, you could do it 100 years later.
Before you go into
even if Nebuch, the father, 100 years later, the son dies, and the father wasn't Mekayim the mitzvah at the time, he could still be Mekayim it before his own 120. No, a day early is no good unless, we're going to see, unless you didn't do it to be chal on the day, you gave the money to the kohen with the understanding that it would be chal later on. Yeah, I mean. Okay, so it comes out that the when we're talking about Ben Shloshim, what we mean on the 31st day. Then we have this question of the actual timing. Says the Gemara, Itma, in terms of having been poda, B'tok Shloshim. What would be the din? Ha'podeh d'no b'tok Shloshim Yom. Rav says, doesn't matter. The ben anyway is padui. And Shmuel says, no, if you reported the ben b'tok Shloshim, ain't b'no padui. Now we saw earlier, and we're going to repeat it again, that for sure the halacha is that Omar Rava, the Kuleyam, of course everybody agrees that if he had tried to be paid to the ben now, before the Shloshim Yom, for sure it wouldn't be Chal. That nobody would hold. So if he said Me'achshav, in b'no padui, because you can't be poda, that's a chalos of Hidyon, on there's no son to be poda before Shloshim Yom. So there for sure it's no good. If you say beferish, listen, I'm giving you this money so that my child in 2 weeks will be poda. If that money is there, itnu lama'od, so then also, that's for sure nobody would say it's not a good, why is it not a good thing? What, I have to, Dafka have the money in my hand at that moment? As long as the Kohen has my money at the time that the Pinyin is chal, so if I gave him a phone call and I said, okay, now take the money, that's what I did basically. I gave him the money, now take the money. For sure that's a typical Pinyin. There's no Inyan. I have to get the money to him, Dafka, in that moment. That's for sure. So what are we talking about? Kipli, the machloket over here, we're talking about a case, is where he says, make the Pinyin after Shloshim Yom, but the Kohen uses up the money in the interim. So the money, is it here at the time of the Pinyin? That's the question. So Rav says, who cares if the money is here? Why would it be different than Kiddushei Isha? Mida d'habia Kiddushei Isha. Listen, the guy goes over to a woman, and he says, I'm giving you this as your Kesef Kiddushin, with an understanding, a condition, that the Kiddushin will be chal 30 days from now. I need my last month as a banner. But, you know, I don't want to change my mind. Here's the money. Take your Kiddushin now. Over there, the halacha is that even if nit'aklu hama'od, the act of the kinyan was chal now for later. So that it's viewed as one long kinyan ascent. So over there, Afagav de Nitachlu Hamaod, Habi Kedushin. That's a perfectly good Kedushin. So why can't we say the same thing is true over here? Hakanami Loshna, you gave him the Kenyan of the Mamain that should be completed, Acher Shloishim Yom of the Ben. Whereas Shmuel says, now wait a minute, there's a tremendous difference. You can accomplish the Kedushin now, right? So therefore, the act of Kedushin is fully accomplishable by you. You put in an external condition that you only want it to be completed in 30 days. That's fine. But if you're unable to do the actual Kenyan now, and you, if, because we just said it, you would have said, me'akshav, it's nothing. It would have been a joke. So you can't do it now. It's what Shai has to say. I'm giving it you now, and the Kenyan will be mushlam at that moment, even though the moment isn't here. The point of a Kenyan is, of the pinyon, is to exchange the money for the child. If there's no money, what did you do 30 days before, or 2 weeks before? Therefore, it's not comparable, Tainish Shmuel. Hatam biyadol kacha me'akshav. Now, if he wanted to, he could have actually done, this is an external, it happens to be, he sets it up with a condition. So therefore, it's fine. But Hacha, what's he going to do? Be paid to the child before Shloshim Yom? He can't do that. It's not biyodai. So in biyodai, liftoto miachshav. Now here we get to a fascinating issue, right? Because we've been discussing, it's beautiful the way it played itself out. We've been discussing how to look at Pinyan HaBen. Is Pinyan HaBen a mitzvah issue so that I wouldn't be machmer on myself? To be paid to myself, I mean, it's all very nice to say, the Kohen can't prove that I owe him money. I don't want to be Mekayim, a very chosh of a mitzvah. So we said, no. What you look at first is the monetary issue. There's no way to identify this mitzvah, other than in terms of mamon. Here we have a machlokas Rav and Shmuel. The halacha is always like either Rav or Shmuel. Shmuel was called Hamelech Elasar. Why Elasar? Because we don't paskin like him in Isser. So he's the king, but not in Isser. We paskin like Rav in Isser, and we paskin like Shmuel in Dinei Mamonos. What do we do here? This is a Pinyan HaBen. So in terms of the mitzvah Pinyan HaBen, it's Isser. But in terms of the moment that defines the mitzvah, it's mumming. What do we do? Therefore, it says the Gemara, Afagav the Kaimalan, the Kalecha the Pligya Rav and Shmuel. Even though we have a general rule, so wherever there's a Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, we go according to Rav in Isser, Yilchatak Rav in Isser, and we go according to Shmuel in Dinei. And over here, you would think, well, I mean, it is a question of Din. No, here we pass like Shmuel. And again, this ties in to the overall pattern that we've seen. First established the Chiyuv Mamon, then based on that, we can talk about the Chiyuv of Mitzvah. I want to mention to you that this little piece of Afagav the Kamelon to Kol Hecha is not really part of the Gemara, apparently. Because it's clear from some of the Rishonim, including the Rush and the Rambam, that because they don't pass, they pass can actually like Rav, not like Rav. In this issue, it can't be that this was a girsa, mamish the girsa in the Gemara itself. So oftentimes, these clawing things are thrown in by either, you know, Zabundaris, the son of the Gainim, or so on. So it seems pretty clear that it's not really in the Gemara. Okay, so now going on, let's take a look if we can bring them right. Tonight, Mate Betosho Shimyo. If the child died within 30 days, then even if he had given the money to the Kohen, Kohen's got to give him back the money. But is that not, we're saying, only because he was made? But, and that's the issue. But suppose he hadn't died. So then what? Then the Kohen keep the money? Why? Because it's Pinyan HaBen. So you see from there that had the child survived, the money given to the Kohen would have been a good Pinyan. No. So from there you have a riot that the Pinyan is chal during the Shloshim Yom. No. My skin is eating lamod. Maybe we're talking about where the money was still there at the Shloshim Yom. We said that everybody is mod if the money is still there. That it's definitely a pinyan. How do you know that that's not what we're talking about? The money is still there, but the child died. So we're saying, had the child not died and survived till the 30 days, yes. Since the money was there, it would be a pinyan. And now that the child died before, give the money back. But that doesn't necessarily prove that if the money had been used up, that the pinyan would have been chal. That's jumping to conclusions. Okay, let me see if we can bring you Raya from here. Tashma. We said that there's a chazaka that if the father died betor shloshim, it's a chazaka that he hadn't been paid to this boy, and when the child grows up, he's going to have to take care of himself. Okay, so that, well, what does that mean? That if they tell, as the Mishnah says, if they tell him, you look, your father, you could bring them, not they tell him, rather, until he could bring a riot that he was holding him. But You could have been put in before 30 days. In other words, hey, if there are witnesses, no, we saw your father give the money to the Kohen. She was a good pinion, even though he died before. So what does that prove? Maybe it's talking about it's a good pinion because the Kohen kept the money until the child was 30 days old. You can't prove to me it's a good pinion because it was there before. Oh, you're right. Now, Tani Tanaka made a review. We don't have a riot. Tani Tanaka made a review, huh? HaPoder b'no b'tor shloshim yom b'no padui. So Rabbi Yehuda was angry at that. He said, Shmuel says, ain b'no padui. And you're coming around here quoting a braita that says b'no padui. I mean, I don't accept this. Tani ain b'no padui. What you should do is change the girsa that you're quoting. Say ain b'no padui. And in fact, even though Afagav the Kaimel Kol Echa the Poligrav Shmuel, the halacha is kirav beisur kishmuel bedine halchayot akavate dishmuel. All right, continues the Mishnah to say who livdot uvno livdot who kodem livno. Okay, let's take a look at the bright to get a little bit into this. Tana Rabban, who livdot uvno livdot who kodem livno. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the mitzvah to be put of the ben comes first because his mitzvah was on his father, and the mitzvah of his child is on him. Omer Reb Yirmiya, everybody is mighty that if he only has five shloim, and it's a question of being poda one or the other, and not a question of which one comes first, for sure a mitzvah on himself is more important. So he comes first. Who kodem livno? My taima, the mitzvah the day adiv. You know what the real machlokas is over here? A far more technical issue than it appeared to be from the way that the Mishnah presented it. The issue over here is you have money, okay, but you have only 5 shekel in cash. You have another 5 shekel in money that is recoverable from a field that you sold. And now the question is it recoverable based on the debt that was leaned against that field because of the chiyuv of pidyon haben to this kohen? That's the question. And therefore, let's take a look at what happens over here. So you have 5 shekel that you owed from before, and you have 5 that are b'nei chorin. That's the question. Now, the problem over here is, can you recover the 5 against a lakuah? So this money, somebody's got a lien on. You want to claim, well, the coin's lien came before your lien, because my father was never poor to me. This is like a 40-year-old lien. And you're only holding this because of a recent lien. So Rabbi Yehuda holds, Milvak tuva betorak tuva b'shtardam. You remember we raised this question yesterday. Something that you owe because of a debt and the chiyuv of the Torah, that's as if it was written in a contract. If it's written in a contract, then it's a registered lien, and it comes before anybody else's right to collect something. Therefore, here's the deal. The debt against his own pinyon haben is recoverable. The debt against his kid's pinyon haben is not recoverable because his kid was just born and this property was leaned maybe 3 years ago. So therefore, Taina's Reb Yehuda, what you need to do is, if you pay up the sons first, then the Kohen's going to be able to collect the money from the Meshuvah money. But if you pay yours first, the Kohen's never going to be able to collect the other 5. Because this is a new debt. This guy has his money before the Kohen gets his. Therefore, he can get his own Didei Azav Torah V'Meshavah. Therefore, he'd be able to collect the money owed for him, even from the Chasim Meshubad. So therefore, what do? Take the $5 that you've got in cash, B'nei Chorin. Use it to be paid to the Ben, because then you can recover the whole thing. Whereas the Rabbanan say it makes no difference anyway, because Milva Ktuva B'Torah is not recoverable, because it's Lav Kiktuva B'Shtar Damya. And we're all agreed that mitzvah that you have on yourself is certainly adif. This, of course, is a complete redefinition of what the words in the Mishnah meant. Because, I mean, according to this, when we say, well, that's because his mitzvah is al aviv, which we thought meant that means that, you know, you have to carry your own mitzvahs first. That's not the point. Mitzvah al aviv means that since this was a mitzvah so long ago, and at that point it was already a shibud of the nechasim, therefore do that first. Now, the question that is raised is a fantastic question. Why are you chayev to pay at all? To be b'kayim a mitzvah aseh, you don't have to pay more than a fifth of what you own. So let's say you don't have enough money for tefillin. You know, enough money to don't buy tefillin. If you have just enough money for tefillin, you don't make yourself a pauper to buy tefillin. So why over here are you supposed to use your last five sla'im? Why should you use your last five sla'im for pidyon habet? For either of you. It's a mitzvah. You're using up too much of your money to pay for the mitzvah. I mean, why are we like taking for granted that? This is like a really serious question. That because of this, the Mishnah Berurah tightens, that it must be that it means don't pay for overpriced mitzvah. Like if you gotta pay $100 for an esrog, ridiculous. Don't pay more than chomesh of your money. But I mean, if this is what you gotta pay, this is what you gotta pay. That is a very, very shvacha answer. The Chazon Ish has a brilliant answer. Chazon Ish's answer is, this has nothing to do with a mitzvah. This is money that you owe. What difference does it make if it's a mitzvah? That's not the point. There's a great story of that happened to Shlomo Hyman, his brother in my family. So there was a smart aleck who said, what's an opinion I've been? You know, it's time for mincha. Let's do mincha first, and then we'll do the opinion I've been. Because we have two mitzvahs, Tadir Vashayda, Tadir Kaida. First, do mincha. So he said to him, right, so if you sue a guy and you're in court, the court says, okay, he owes you $5 million. So the court tells him, pay up. The guy says, no, I have to daven mincha first. So you're going to say, okay, daven mincha first. You're going to say, drop dead, give me my money. Same thing over here. What's that to do with the mitzvah? There's no Tadir Vashayda, Tadir, you owe money. Pay up the money. So therefore, this has nothing to do with the money for mitzvahs. There's another, by the way, very brilliant answer among the Achronim circulating. One second. A debtor is a chiyuv. What do we have? He comes before. It's like, what should it be for? This is what you owe. What does it have to do with kedima of mitzvah? Well, it's an interesting question that the president is raising here, because the fact of the tashlum of the debt is because priyas bal chayv mitzvah. That itself is also. Yeah, but okay. There's another fantastic answer circulating about the Achronim, which is that where do we say only give the fifth? That's to define how much money the mitzvah should cost. But the Torah defined what the mitzvah cost. It's chomei shloim. So therefore, obviously, pay chomei shloim. What are you telling me? Chomei shloim is too much for me. What are you, nuts? Mashenka, when you're talking about tefillin, I mean, the Torah didn't say how much money you're supposed to pay for your tefillin. So good, so we're defining this is how much you should pay. Don't pay more than that, right? Yeah. I'll tell you, stop now that once we're talking, it's the brilliant psak of my grandfather's, that's Oliver Ruderman, where Rav Moshe once called him up to discuss a case of a child that was going to need to have plastic surgery on his penis. And the urologist said, that if they do a bris before he does the surgery, and the surgery couldn't have been done until he was like 6 months old or something, so if they do a circumcision before, then it can make the surgery not useful anymore. Right. And so he wanted to know, like, whether they should delay it. They shouldn't delay the bris. And I remember I was so impressed with the conversation. And my grandfather says, obviously you delay the bris. Because Lamaisa, this father, to make certain that his child's penis would be okay, would be zikr kedai, willing to pay a fifth of what he had. So that means that that what you're costing him to do the bris bizbana is more than a fifth. If that's the case, he's not mechuyev in bris milah. That's too expensive. Because he would be willing to pay that amount of money to prevent damage to the child's penis. So if that's the case, basically you're telling him pay more than a fifth. Ramosha agreed. Then possibly should put it off. It's brilliant. That's thinking. And it's gonna obviously have nothing to do with cash. It's not the cash value. It's a question of what is it worth to you? What do you need to put out for it?
Okay. Danger or health is not enough to have.
It's already a different issue. It's suffix. It's not an immediate question. It's, you know, and so on and so forth. It's a question of a good looking penis rather than a functional. But I mean, it's got like different issues. But the bottom line is that this is what you'd be willing to pay. No. I see you come from Hasidus Shishtak. What are you doing in South Africa?